Hey everyone, quick update on how you can help and support the show. I now have a $1 tier over on Patreon, patreon.com/DarrenHupke. For $1, you'll actually get new episodes a week early, and you'll be able to submit your own questions to be asked as icebreaker questions in future episodes. I'll give users a shout out whose questions I select, and for just $1 a month, that help goes a long way for me in web costs and supporting the show. So thanks for checking that out and considering it, and enjoy the episode. My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of the show. Thanks for listening. I'm just going to do a quick intro here to get things going. I usually come up here and give you all updates on my projects, but it's kind of the same things. Same things are happening as they have been, so why waste your time? Let's just get right into the content here. Find Retro Gamezine on pixelsandpolygons.net. You can buy digitally over at patreon.com/DarrenHupke/shop. That's actually not just for Retro Games. You can buy the 32-bit library books there. You can buy Beat 'em Up on physical or digital on either one of those sites. And I've got t-shirts. So check out shirts from the cover art that was done for the Retro Games Eaten issues by Rice Spirit. Yeah, check out my stuff. It's all online. It's free stuff on Patreon, digital stuff for cheap. Physical books from the website pixelsandpolygons.net, and tell some friends. Enjoy the episode. We'll be back again next Friday. If you want to listen to episodes early for just $1, you can support the show for as little as $1 a month. That will let you get weekly, 1 week early access to the shows, and you'll also be able to contribute your own questions that I may choose for icebreakers in the future, and if I do, I'll give you a shout-out. So, simple, fun, hopefully it's cool. Check it out on the Patreon shop, and enjoy the episode. We'll see you all next week. Bye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I am Darren Hupke, and we've got a returning guest. It's been a little while, actually, since we've had our friend Jason on the show, but welcome back, Jason. Hello.
Hello. It's been 84 years.
So, GameRaveTV, PlayStationLibrary.com. Is it just me who noticed you using the PlayStation Library like domain to replace GameRave TV, or has that always kind of essentially been the case? Like, how are things going on your creative front there on that end?
It's going good. Aside from just kind of publicly announcing that change on YouTube, it was basically just a soft launch. It's mainly because if you type it, the URL for PlayStation Library is just a forwarding URL. I realized the problem in the modern world is no one wants to say the word hyphen in GameRave.com when explaining something. So I was like, all right, I need a URL that is easy to remember. And unfortunately, like, I am the coolest PlayStation guy ever was too long of a URL. So I started thinking about stuff and I was like, you know what? Everyone's going after this angle or that vibe. I'm like, I'm going to call it what it literally is. It's a library. So I grabbed that. And then, as I was setting up the URL, I realized if I change the actual domain over, 20 years of hyperlinking to the site dies. I was like, you know what? We'll just make it a forwarding thing. And what was so funny was, is in the YouTube announcement, I think one or two of the first posts were, thank you, God, for just forwarding it.
That's good. Yeah, that would have been a lot of just like back-end work of updating, you know, all of that for everyone. I mean, anything that was linking to it directly. Yeah. So 20 years almost, huh? Wow. What are some of the recent like videos and projects you've kind of put together? Catch us up on some of the recent PlayStation library work you've been doing.
Well, probably the biggest change that really hasn't seen enough, how would I say this, viewer side, is I have started collecting for the Japanese PlayStation. I am just about 300 titles in. The original plan was to go through I think it's called the 20th anniversary catalog and then the perfect catalog and use those as the base template for like the base set, and then from there work my way through the ungodly variant set as far as setting up like, okay, I need like these best series, I need this series, etc., for checklists and the like. And then, unfortunately, I started actually playing some of the games, and the purchasing has taken the backseat to me being crack cocaine addicted to a couple of the games. So that has been taking up a lot of my back-end time to the point where, like, some of the last Game Reef TF episodes in the last 2 months have been me just going, oh, look, 14 days have passed, I need an episode, we'll wing it! Just recording without a script. Yeah, that's probably the biggest change. Otherwise, like, just doing a little bit more exploring here and there. Kind of like sneaking in a couple extra guidebooks here, like spending that cover gallery and stuff like that. But until I can get other things taken care of, and they're, as I told someone else, the one project probably won't be done until next year. I'm kind of stretched thin, so I'm trying to like rope myself back into a normal consistency.
Yeah, I mean that's tough, especially when you find time to actually work on these things, and suddenly you have an interest in the games, like, you know, you wanting to just play the games, which is why you're doing the things that you're doing, you know, is taking away time from you to, you know, actually go out and create the content. It's just a balancing act on top of, you know, the extra outside extracurriculars you want to do and like any modern gaming you want to do. So I get it, you know, it's not biting off more than you can chew, because, you know, we're voluntarily doing these things, but it does add up over time for sure.
It does. It really does. And one of the games I got addicted to is called Zixseed, Legend of Plasma Light.
This is the one, I think we talked about this. This is the one where you use the, you actually use the plastic, like model kit, like type, like components to put onto it. Yeah.
Yeah. Since last we talked, I finished all 256, variant imagery and photography and photoshopping of the model variants. I'm currently working on the quote unquote guide part of it. And part of that process is the pilots in the game can affect your damage ratios based on which robot part they have equipped. So the problem is in order to get that digit, I basically have to like start a fight, pick up controller two, punch player one or kick player one just once, and then let the timer tick down to the part swap page, and then I can do the math on the damage screen and then repeat that process for like 30 different moves per robot per pilot.
Wow. yeah, check out Jason's work. Go to PlayStationLibrary.com. Find him on YouTube as well. I'll have the links in the show notes below. But yeah, it's fun. Just like the work of that collector, of that completionist, of that that mindset. You know, it's needed. Like I said, I use your data. Like the SCUS and SOUS numbers and release date information. Like I'm always using your site to cross-reference with other data that I'm finding to ensure that I've got it right. And oftentimes yours is the right data, you know, 99.9% of the time. So anybody who's looking for information, data, behind the scenes stuff, like you've got full scans of like the disc art, you know, the back of the case information, like stuff that's utility, but like comes in super clutch for us crazy folks like me who are making books and zines and all that stuff on old games. So I appreciate your efforts, and I will continue to follow along. But yeah, thanks for doing it, Jason.
I appreciate it.
We've got some this or that questions I'm ready to ask you before we get to the icebreaker, if you think you're ready.
Oh, God. It's always a rough one. I'm ready. Let's do it. Peel the Band-Aid off.
Castlevania or Metroid?
Ugh, it depends on the era. If it were NES, Metroid. If it were NES, Metroid. If it were Super Nintendo... Super Metroid. If it were PlayStation, Castlevania by default. I'm not gonna lie, on the Super Nintendo one, I think if it were like I just need something to play, it'd be Castlevania. If it were like I'm gonna spend the entire month playing this, it'd be Metroid.
Okay. Unnecessary sequel or remake?
Oh, that's a good one.
This is a newer one I've cooked up.
See, the problem is with an unnecessary sequel, if you're loyal to the series, you're going to play it anyway just to give it a chance because it might become something cool and new, aka Mass Effect Andromeda. But a remake can make the classic look phenomenal, aka Legendary Edition. I'm going to go with remake.
Remake, okay. Graphics or frame rate?
If we're based on the decision you have to make on some PS4 and PS5 games, I'm going to go frame rate.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, I was playing Kena Bridge of Spirits, and I didn't realize I was already in frame rate mode. And I was like, oh, the graphics look pretty cool. Let's see what the graphic update. And they started playing 30 frames. I'm like, I can't do this.
Yeah, it's one thing if you boot into it and you just start it in the 30 frames, like, you know, like a 30 FPS lock. Like, oh, okay, like if you start to like play it and get acclimated there. But if you at all see it running faster or 60 or higher, you're just like, it is just so tough to go back. Like I can't unsee, like, you know, I can't unsee the frames I'm unseeing in 30 frames per second modes and stuff. When I was younger, I would prefer the graphics. I'd like, no, I want it to look the best, you know. I don't care if it's running Nintendo 64 speeds here. I want it to look the best. But now let me get that buttery smooth gameplay. Mario Tennis or Mario Golf?
I suck at both. I would go with golf, just because at least then it's just you against the course and not being, you know, slapped around by a CPU.
Mm-hmm. Animal Crossing or Elden Ring?
Oh, Animal Crossing. I will take the mortgage over the self-loathing that I can't beat a boss.
That's good.
Can you tell I'm an adult?
And let's do last one, Sonic or Knuckles?
Oh, are we talking character or gameplay?
Either. This is your this or that. You define this however you need to define this. You know what?
I think I would go Knuckles, just not his stupid era. Like, whatever game that was where, like, they turned him into a dumb big jock with the bandages on his hands. Like, he was badass in the old Genesis games.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, thanks for participating in the this or that. We'll move on to an icebreaker before we get to the main topic here. Let's see if I get you with one of these newer ones. Actually, let's just do this one. What was the last arcade game you played? An actual, like, arcade cabinet and everything. What was the last arcade game you played?
Oh, God. If the one up at Best Buy doesn't count, let me think about this for a second. It would have to be 2 years ago at the Midwest Gaming Classic. They had the whole arcade pinball set up. I remember playing the pinball machine. I can't remember what the arcade game was that I played, but I did play it though. I just can't remember it.
I've been doing a lot of conventions. I did the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo, you know, last weekend. But then, you know, Portland Retro Gaming Expo, they have a really cool, like, you know, they've just dozens and dozens, you know, probably more in the hundreds of arcade games, just our free play throughout the weekend and everything as well, too. So, their arcade games exist, you know, arcades themselves may not, but, there's still diehard people preserving and maintaining these that have them, and they get to show up to, like an on tour, retired musician kind of propped back up on stage to get out there to play at these places. I know you're a fan of the Lethal Enforcers games as well, too. So I was wondering if it was going to be like an old light gun shooter or something.
Oh, I wish. I would say, like, I'm actually thinking about Galloping Ghost. Like, do they even have light gun games there? I think they do, but it's been years since I've been back to Galloping Ghost.
Mm. Yeah, I've got no real. Well, I guess there was that. I found one place. I took my oldest daughter to a birthday out here in Arizona, but it's a they're open. Like just Friday and Saturday, or Thursday, Friday, Saturday only, from like 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. And it's like in like a business complex. So like we're pulling into a place that's completely dark and nobody's parked anywhere except for around the entrance to this place, because it's only open after every place else around it has already closed down for the day. And you just pay like a flat rate to go in, and it's free play arcades and a bunch of these, you know, all bunched up by like genre and era and all stuff. It's really cool, but it's like, it feels like you're in some secret like speakeasy or something like that, because you're driving through like just a business complex in the middle of nowhere to get into it and everything. But
I was going to say, did they give you guys like silver members only jackets from the 80s? Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. They have got a projector that, and they have like usually like a movie on loop playing like each night and everything. So when we were there, like Back to the Future was just playing against a wall, you know, like that, you know, as you walk around essentially from all the cabinets, you'd be able to see the movie playing, but they just got it kind of on a loop just for like the vibes and everything too. So
that's cool.
I forget the name of it. I'll have to get the name of it and give them a shout out. But it's a cool place. We need to go back there. Actually, arcade games are fun. All right. Well, let's talk about the main topic. So you sent me over a couple questions that you were interested in answering, and one of them is one that, you know, sometimes could put a target on your back. So this one here, hot take, what is one of your, I don't want to say most divisive, but, well, you know, what is a gaming hot take you've had from your years of being around and in games? You know, what's that opinion you have that might contradict the norm?
I was going to say, I've already taken my lumps for absolutely hating hidden gems and grading. I think right now my current hot take is that collecting as it was meant to be done is over and done with. Like, it doesn't exist anymore. I hate to say in the old days, because it's now legitimately the old days based on my age. In the old days when you were collecting something, it was for the purpose of trading information with other people. So like, hey, let's get together, figure out how many games are on the PlayStation, what variants it has. You know, sometimes the rarity, things like that. And then you would combine it all into like an actual web page or a book and distribute it, and you'd be cool to, you know, you'd be good to go, update where needed as the years pass on. And in the modern era, that has just all given way to Instagram posts and like buttons and, you know, what's the craziest, dumbest thing I can put to a YouTube video just to get the views and the clicks. And I think after the last, like, say 5 or 10 years of that, I think the damage that has been done is either going to just crash the hobby, if not the livelihood of the actual industry, or you're going to see a renaissance rebirth where people realize, you know, once all these social media platforms close because they're not making money, they're going to realize, oh yeah, maybe we should have been posting these pictures to an actual static website. But yeah, just the modern day culture just annoys. I am at my old man stage in life, and I understand that, and I see it, and I'm just running with it. Like, it's if I see one more post about someone bragging about finding a copy of like Wii Fit, I'm gonna break my monitor.
Oh, just from like, you know, like a YouTube thumbnail of like, oh, I found the weirdest game on the Wii that no one knows about, and things like that.
Dude, I've seen two different videos now that said Soul Blade was a hidden gem. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that would be like saying Mario Brothers 1 is a hidden gem. Like any game that has, I don't know, 15 years of sequels and guidebooks and anime and dedicated fan sites, I'm pretty sure it's not hidden at this point.
Yeah,
like okay.
Oh no, I get what you're saying. Like, yeah, that's like my YouTube algorithm. Like, I love, there's channels that make really great like documentarian, like video essays, like look backs and retrospectives on games I love watching. But like, then you know, once your algorithm starts having gaming videos, then yes, you start having these things pop up, like the top 10 like must play underappreciated games on, you know, whatever. And it's like Final Fantasy Tactics and, you know, things like that. It's like, I don't know what era you were in where that wasn't like a largely like talked about, discussed and popular title that's, you know, underrated by any means whatsoever, or a hidden gem of it all. But like, yeah, like people have to, they don't have to, but if they're investing in the machine of trying to get clicks, likes, and monetize whatever it may be, there's like this formula that they have to do that is just like, you know, it's nonsense. It's not, you know, like, it's not for, you know, someone like you or me who is looking into it for the information, for the information sharing, the informing, the like looking back on it, you know, like with fondness or research or whatever it may be. It's just like, you know, for the attention in the moment for 30 seconds and then move on to the next thing.
Yeah, like it's just getting worse by the day. Like another culprit would be like the ones that are like, I bought every blank, and like their thumbnail shows how much they spent, and it's, my first thought is, or you could have paid 10% of your mortgage off. Like, did you really need that many hardware? Like, what's going on, bro?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. So, you know, in your opinion, do you think that there are still, you know, collectors, you know, who are doing it for data, for sharing, for like just like that mindset of completing like the task and the checklist and you know, like just like the wholeheartedness of it anyway. Do you think people like that are still existing, just not online on these social media platforms? I mean, are they still out there, you think? Or are they less and less people being interested in it because it's getting harder and harder to find these things because they are bought up by these, you know, speculative and clickbaity, you know, content creators, essentially?
I think they're out there, but like, as you pointed out, like, resellers are fine people. I'm talking about the scalpers. Scalpers aside, another big problem is that, especially in my area of the planet, like, there is little to no physical shops to walk into. Unless I need like one of 10 potential PS5 games from Best Buy or the GameStop across the street, like, there's nothing. There's no mom and pop shops. People at the flea markets are using the price charting. Like, there's like, it's like, bro, like, not to intention of scamming the person at the flea market of what they're selling, but if you're going to sit there and check prices in real time rather than just have them pre-priced from the night before, why would I bother buy from you when I can just do that at home in air conditioning on eBay? Like, it just doesn't, like, I think another part of the problem, too, is that I believe, for lack of a better phrase, the hardcores are still out there doing the legwork, but because of how, depending on what they're looking for, like, if you're going for a full Switch and you're actually going to document everything, hey, man, more power to you. I hope you have enough, you know, memory sticks to install and all the DLC and stuff. But as far as, like, people interested in older product, like for the PlayStation, for example, like, that well is drying up really, really quick. And if the people who are invested in that situation are not actively tracking it, in 10 years' time, like, any information we could glean from potential variants or, like, you know, store exclusive type items, it's gone. And I think that's what scares me the most, especially when in the modern collector, like, you might be going for a full Switch set, but then Nintendo says, oh, by the way, if you don't play the cartridges at least once every 5 years, the data corrupts. So it's like, oh, that sounds fantastic for sales bins and, like, old inventory stock.
Yeah.
It's just scary.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, like, I guess that's why it's, you know, it's good to have people who preserve games, like, you know, in alternative ways, you know, like your website and things, or, like, you know, like the people who make those great, like, analytical or documentarian style, like, video essays and things like that, where you can kind of still, like, look back and have this data and have this information and, you know, participate, like, in the game essentially without having to have the game, because as things get harder and harder to find, I'm still hopeful that at some point, you know, there is some type of, you know, digital preservation. I know there's sites that even, you know, help do that. While they don't redistribute the data, you know, for legal reasons, but still, like, capturing the data to have from a preservation standpoint, it's just kind of important to do those types of things. And you know, hopefully one day there's a way that, you know, people can access and find these things and enjoy it. But, you know, until that time, at least, you know, find the ways that you can play them and enjoy them and find them. And, you know, don't, if you have something special and something unique, you know, like, share that out and, you know, have people be informed about that, so that that information can be preserved somewhere, you know, like on PlayStation Library. but cool. Well, yeah, interesting question. That led to, obviously, you know, interesting dialogue. I mean, there is more there. Like, you know, I don't mean to sound negative. Like, people running a business who are selling, like, retro games, like, there is a business there where, you know, you're flipping games, you're buying them for amount, and you got to sell them again for profit, and there's supply and demand. Like, you know, they're not necessarily the enemy there at all. Like, you know, they're running a business. They're trying to do their thing. But
oh, yeah. Like, I have no problem with resellers. Like, especially resellers who are willing to take in the disc only, the cart onlys, like, you know, give me your tired and your broken and repair it. Those guys are fine. I'm talking about the beer bellied, backward hat wearing guys who will walk into Target and take the entire shelf of Pokemon cards. Like, those guys can just walk off a cliff. Like, I'm sorry.
Yes, agreed. Yeah. And there's even some good shops I've discovered, you know, in traveling and being around, the who do know they may have some games that have, like, a higher premium value, especially on things like price charting and things like that, but they've got it set for a price because they know what they bought it for, and they also keep that price, they know, they to keep that price competitive or under that price potentially, because they know if they move, that's going to help keep, you know, their bills paid and their ability for them to buy more and continue to kind of stock and inventory things. And they usually will have, like, a cool glass case of, like, you know, the high end and premium stuff there that you can kind of, you know, drool over and, you know, have maybe for one day's type of thing. But those folks are the ones kind of doing it right and kind of keeping the hobby, you know, interesting, and keep, you know, let generations discover these games. And, you know, sure, some of those buyers are coming in and going home and making YouTube videos about, you know, the hidden gem that is, you know, Soul Calibur on the Dreamcast. But, yeah, there isn't, you know, necessarily too much of a negative coming from that when a shop's doing it for the right reason. So that's cool. But yeah, we did it. We answered the question. That's the goal of the show. So, anything you'd like to plug or share before we wrap up for the day, Jason?
No, just check out PlayStationLibrary.com. I'm on YouTube as GameRaveTV, all one word. I am always like the thing I always want to put forward is never, ever be afraid to contact me however you see fit. The question, there is no dumb question. There is only stupid answers. And I try to avoid those as best I can.
All right. Well, I'll have the links to all that in the show notes below if y'all want to check out Jason. But thank you for coming on the show. We'll talk to you soon for another episode.
Thanks. Thank you for having me. I love you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai, Captain Dangerous Parker, and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.